Welcome. You're listening to the Mac Observer's Background Mode Special Edition podcast covering the Apple event of September 12th with me and Michael Gartenberg, former Apple Senior Director. Michael, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me back.
Hey, what a morning. 2 hours. Are you pumped?
Yeah, it was really a great keynote, and I'm amazed that the folks in marketing were able to squeeze all of this stuff down into 2 hours, because there was about 4 hours worth of material that they had there.
Well, we were getting a little bit annoyed at TMO at the start. Of course, I'm very impressed by how thoughtful the team was, and Tim Cook in presenting some thoughtful opening remarks about Steve Jobs, his memory, the dedication of the building, mention of the people affected by hurricanes Irma and Harvey, and so that was a very thoughtful, well thought out opening. But then when they started drifting a little bit with Angela Ahrens, we're going, okay, come on, let's go.
Yeah, and again, you know, Tim has done this before in terms of recognizing things that have, you know, gone on in the world acknowledging them. I think the last time he spent a lot of time, you know, riffing on various subjects related to humanity, which was great. And I agree, the opening, you know, that Tim did was it was wonderful. It was the expressive way of Apple saying, we're more than just, you know, a company that makes phones and watches and stuff. We care more. But then it was like, and now let's shift to tell you how we sell you stuff.
Well, Angela Ahrens did that too a little bit when she was talking about the Apple Town Square and the sense of community and the architecture and the preservation of the buildings and the professional creatives to, you know, teach people how to do things. That's something that really helps people warm up to a company, helps people trust the company, helps the company believe that Apple stands behind its words when it comes to design and privacy and security and community. So, yeah, that was valuable. It's just that we were all so excited about all the hardware. And what an event now. Two in a row. WWDC hit it out of the park with the Macintosh, and now again with the iPhone X. Roman numeral X, but pronounced iPhone X, and the new Apple TV 4K with HDR. I mean, they're really on a roll now.
And the Apple Watch. Let's not forget the Apple Watch with
making and receive phone calls.
Right, yeah. Cellular capabilities. So, yeah, I thought it was a great keynote. I personally thought Angela's stuff was just a little too much, you know, let's tell you how great we are at selling you stuff. And, you know, yeah, they do preserve landmarks, and it's wonderful that they do that. You have these great buildings in New York, for example, post office and things that, you know, Apple has kept the total... I'm trying to find the right word, gestalt of the building, while at the same time transforming it into a store. But it still felt to me like Angela was saying, look how great we are at selling you stuff and how we sell you stuff and where you sell you stuff. But, I mean, that's your job. I think that part might have been killed from the keynote, but that's just me. I thought that was a little too much patting ourselves on the back. I think Tim might have gone right into the product. But so let's start talking. Watch. Watch was up first.
Series 3. Yeah, the number one watch in the world. I noticed Tim Cook didn't say smartwatch. He just said the number one watch in the world. I take that as he meant it.
I think he meant it, but remember, there's a lot of metrics to go around that. I believe the only watch they compared themselves to was Rolex. Obviously, you're trying to compare Apple Watch to Rolex. And depending how you do your metrics, is Apple Watch the number one watch in the world?
Can't compete against $12 Timexes.
Right. I think that, you know, the Swatch Group that owns most of the watch brands in the world and the other folks would say, yes, we may not be the number one particular watch, you know, Rolex saying, our Rolex Submariner is not the one that we're watching the world. And Apple does play a little bit fast and loose with coming up with these stats. So, yeah, I mean, the stat is real. And I think the more important thing is whether it's number one watch or not, is Apple has said smartwatches are cool, that you can wear a smartwatch and not being looked at as some sort of strange geek wearing something bizarre on your wrist. We see them all over the place. We see celebrities wearing them. I turn on the news. I see the news anchors and the correspondents wearing them.
I think the health and fitness aspect really helped reduce that just plain old geek factor. You know, it's one thing to have a watch on your wrist that can compute celestial time, but you know, that nobody uses, but to have it do new things like, you know, and watch your heart rate and do an enhanced analysis of your resting heart rate, look for heart rhythms, and manage your steps each day, and the new things he talked about, vertical feet for skiing possibly and snowboarding. I mean, they've really created a compelling whole health and fitness picture that makes the watch seem like some essential part of your lifestyle and your health as opposed to just some toy.
And I agree. I mean, I think it's probably the ultimate product for that. I know I'm going to use one as I slowly get myself back into shape. But let's face it, most people in the world are sitting on their couches watching Game of Thrones, eating, you know, cheese doodles, and don't care about this stuff. They're not skiers. They're not swimmers. They're not runners. They don't care about their heart rate.
But it's there, so, if they want it, and that's a big thing.
Right.
I can have that. I can aspire to that.
Right. But at least what Apple has done is they took what the original watch message was, which we're going to throw this stuff all over the place and see what sticks. And they've now defined it in terms of health. I think that the majority of people using Apple Watch are using it, one, to tell time, two, because it looks cool, and three, because of things like notifications, which are huge. I'm surprised that Tim didn't bring that up, because the idea of keeping a phone in your pocket, getting a notification on your wrist, and being able to either look at it, respond to it, you know, talk to it, dismiss it, those seem to be the real drivers of people using smartwatches. It's not skiers, it's normal people. But
what do you think of the idea of being able to make and receive phone calls?
Yeah, so I think that's pretty cool. It's a little bit Dick Tracy-ish. I can tell you that I've used a Samsung Gear 3 with cellular capabilities, and I wore it for a couple of months. And it's one of those things that I found was like, oh, this is really cool. But on the other hand, you know, not so much. I didn't want to take phone calls and actually talk to my wrist. I couldn't really respond to emails or, you know, or text messages.
Yeah, but I think it's one of those things that's going to have unintended consequences. There's going to be serendipity with that.
Yeah,
There's going to be stories of people who are out stranded somewhere and their phone is dead and their battery or broke or something happened and their phone was stolen and they got emergency help by making a phone call on their Apple Watch Series 3. It's going to be all sorts of cool stuff happening. I don't mean that story was cool, but I mean unexpected things.
Right. And the ability to do things like call 911. You know, again, the biggest scenario here is who leaves their phone behind? People who exercise. Well, that works rather well. If I go out
for a
run.
Or if you forget your phone.
Yeah. I mean, if I go
out for a run. I have to say, there's some members of my family who sometimes walk out the door, forget the phone, but the watch is always on.
Hey, I had to drive, you know, back 30 minutes the other day because I left my phone. And, you know, I mean, I've seen data that basically says people will go back for their phone faster than they'll go back for their wallet or their keys because their phone is integral. But that's the bottom line, is their phone is so much a part of their life. So the idea of, yes, having a standalone thing like that, but Again, I'm trying to come up with the use cases. I'm buying this thing in case I leave my phone behind. I'm buying this thing because I'm a runner or I'm a swimmer. Talking to your wrist.
Yeah, but people have asked for it. It's the number one request. So
hey, you
Apple
know,
gave it to them. Hey, we got to move on. So
yeah, this is the difference between Apple saying we know what people want and listening to what people want. Yeah. I suspect, and we also didn't see pricing, by the way. How much extra per month is this going to cost? I know on the Samsung devices, it's between $5 and $10 a month. Are people willing to add that cost onto their phone service for this? So it's
we'll have
a
wait and see.
Yeah, it's a wait and see.
So Eddie Q came out and he showed us a new Apple TV 4K with an A10X processor, graphics processors four times more powerful. I was hoping for a new industrial design. I really don't like that black brick, but you know, they figured the little black brick is good enough. This live sports thing looks pretty cool. The price looks pretty cool. Not extremely, you know, they're not gouging us. I don't perceive as a premium over the high definition version. And the big win was the you can pay the same price for your 4K movies as HD movies, and your HD movies can be upgraded. What do you think? I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty cool. I don't mind the black box. In fact, I kind of like it. It kind of sits in the back. The problem that I have with it, and it's not so much a problem, is Apple is late to the game here. There are other folks that are already doing this. You know, my cheap Vizio TV does 4K Amazon, does 4K Netflix, which is really about, you know, and 4K movies, which is about all there is out there. And I didn't have to buy a box to do it. It came on my remote control. And that's pretty much the standard. I felt that Apple moving into 4K and, you know, HDR is a step late to the game. The real question that Apple has, and I know it's something they've been working on forever, is how can my box become input one? And when I say that, think about your TV. It has multiple input, right? Multiple inputs. Usually, you know, the first one is your cable box or your TiVo. Your second one might be, might be your game console or an Apple TV or something like that. Apple is saying, how can we conquer input one? And they haven't done that yet. They simply don't have the content deals that are required, the DVR deals, the networks, the live stuff. We didn't hear any more about single sign-on because, you know, single sign-on has been a fail. I mean, yeah, if I have Ukrainian, cable TV, I can do.
But the good news is that if Apple is going to get into the original TV content creation, they have to have a flagship device to deliver that original content. So, they just more or less had to do that. What will be interesting is to see whether the company gets behind this new 4K box as a 4K. Mainstream thing, we're into the technology, we're involved with the community, we go to the shows, we advertise in the right magazines, we're delivering good 4K content, we're delivering good original content of our own in 4K. There's a spectrum of stuff that they got to do to back up this box rather than just throw it out there and put it on the shelf in the Apple stores.
Absolutely. To me, this was table stakes. Apple finally getting to the table and playing table stakes, which is important. But again, you know, one of the things I noticed was Eddie said, wow, we're going to have Amazon 4K coming soon. And I'm looking at my TV remote and I'm going, I got that today and it didn't cost me anything.
Yeah, but there are people who want to stay in the Apple fold who just kind of like the idea of being in the Apple ecosystem. You know, and when you have an Apple TV on the internet and you run HDMI into your TV, it's iOS. It's tvOS that's on the internet and exposing you to the entire internet. And rather than having a smart TV app on an Android TV, which you could be a little concerned about, you know, you've got tvOS between you and the bad guys, and that's a good feeling.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, this was a great move. It was something that Apple needed to do, and it sets up a stage for larger stuff. At least they're in the game. So as there's more 4K content, and even more important, HDR content, which makes your 4K stuff look really, really good, Apple has the hardware to do it. The idea of, say, taking your music, your videos, and, you know, scaling them up to 4K reminds me when they took all your music and they said however your music was, if it was, you know, really encoded poorly, we're just going to up it for you for free. So it's a great move. The new games are interesting. Apple TV never quite took off as the mainstream game console, but given the new performance and given, you know, the ability to create more interesting, more challenging games, puts Apple back in the game. So I would look at Apple TV now as it was a win. It brought Apple to the place where they had to be, and it got them there. Right. And now it's a place for them to leverage to go on their own content, doing content deals with other folks to make it out there. But to me, at this point, 4K is table stakes. 4K TV is, you know, out there. You buy a new television, you get 4K.
I think a lot of people are going to buy a new TV now. I think people are waiting and waiting. They go, well, I can get another 4K game with an Apple TV. So guess what I'm getting for Christmas?
Yeah, this is look. Yeah, I mean,
4K television.
Absolutely. The good thing about Apple, you know, that's done here, the TV industry is going to love, is they've given people more of a reason. In terms of just, you know, mind share, in terms of saying, wow, we need 4K because Apple's supporting it. If you owned a 4K TV and you have been cursing Apple going, why aren't you supporting 4K like everyone else? This was the answer to that. So I think they showed we've caught up. Not only have we caught up, but we've created a launching platform to do even more stuff. And we're still going to focus on this casual game space in ways that other people can't do. And it was interesting because they were still showing the classic, you know, Apple TV remote control, not one of the game remote controls. So we're going to have to see now what people are going to do with this. But the fact that Apple is out there, that they're creating these partnerships, they're leveraging it. They're not at input one yet. They're not replacing my cable box or my TiVo, but they're certainly giving me a reason to put them on
input too. Maybe they'll reinvigorate the whole system like they did the Mac. Maybe this is just square one. We got to move on. So the iPhone 8 and iPhone 10. Wow.
Yeah.
So my first thought when I saw this was everybody's going to want the iPhone 10. The iPhone 10 comes out later. It's very expensive. How are the sales of the iPhone 8 going to be, the 8 and the 8 Plus, when people are having the iPhone 10 on their mind? What's going to be the trade-off in price and desire for these two phones? Can Apple sell as many phones in the quarter as they normally do? How are people going to make this decision?
Yeah, this is going to be fun. And, you know, part of it was sort of ruined over the weekend. I remember in geometry class, I used to shout out the answer, and my teacher would go, "Gartenberg, you're stealing my thunder." And, you know, over the weekend, we learned pretty much just about everything that we needed to know about these devices.
From an Apple employee who's probably no longer an employee.
or someone who's being hunted down. You know, and I've been doing this a long time. This was probably the single biggest and worst leak that has ever come out of Apple. It's probably even worse than, you know, an iPhone 4 in a bar. But moving along, iPhone 8, great product. It wasn't a 7S or 7S Plus. They went right to 8, which is great. They've got a lot of features that, you know, some other folks have had for a while, like wireless charging. But it's nice that it has, finally come.
Well, my understanding is the wireless charging is only available on the iPhone X. It was only discussed in the context of the X.
I thought it was.
They didn't get to the wireless section until they brought up the tone.
I thought it was in the 8, but it's possible I could be wrong. We can, you know, go back and check it because one of us heard something different. But if it is, iPhone 8 finally is up there with the competition.
You're right. I'm looking at my notes. It says iPhone 8 wireless charging. I was wrong.
It's okay. I'm never wrong. You should always listen to me. I tell that to my wife.
You're always strong.
Doesn't work. You know, glass back, you know, plus and minus. I know any people who, including myself, who owned glass backed iPhones, who spent a lot of time replacing that glass back, you know, phone that's made out of glass.
Yeah, but notice how quickly they got rid of that awful piano black that scratches. That was a disaster, I thought.
Yeah, you know, piano black was interesting. It was cool. And I think part of it is, you know, the way Apple does things, part of these things with the colors, is to make sure that you know I'm using the latest and greatest.
Right.
You know that.
Look
you know,
at me.
Piano black.
I've got the new. So you can see the Apple logo on my phone.
If I've got the new, you know, color, it shows that, you know, I've got the latest and greatest. You know, you're still running a generation behind. It was a great upgrade. There was a lot of, and I'm looking at my notes here, a lot of geeky buzzword type stuff, bionic processors and machine learning and all sorts of interesting things that basically say, yeah, this is the best iPhone. Well, until we get to the next part, that Apple has ever made. It's got some new stuff. They didn't really talk about necessarily how it takes advantage of iOS 11. And, you know, it's the phone you buy. Last year you bought a 7. This year you'll buy an 8 if you're, you know, buying a phone. I'm not seeing, and I could be totally wrong here, people running out to buy the 8, standing online to buy the 8, getting in their orders to buy the 8, unless they own a 6. But if you own a 7...
Yeah, it's that 2 or 3 year upgrade cycle.
Yeah, right. If you own a 7, if you own a 7 Plus, I'm trying to think of the reasons why you would retire that device and buy a new one. Like I said, if I were buying an iPhone right now, if someone said, you know, what should I buy? iPhone 8, no doubt. Just go order one. Don't buy a 7. Don't buy an SE. Don't buy anything else. That's what you should buy. But if you owned an iPhone 7, and iPhone 7 was extremely popular, even though people said, hey, this thing is going to be a dud. It didn't change the form factor. It doesn't do anything new other than, you know, a better camera.
And losing the headphone jack.
Yeah.
Oh, which turned out to be a non-event, by the way.
Non-issue. No one cared. Other than, you know, geeks like us who wrote, you know, articles and articles and articles about it. But I don't know. What do you think? Did you see anything in the iPhone 8 if you're an iPhone 7 user? I mean, I'm an iPhone 7 user.
That's the quandary, you know. If you're an iPhone 6 user and it's 2 or 3 years and you're ready to upgrade, and you think you can't afford an iPhone 10, then an iPhone 8 is a natural upgrade. And that may make up for the sales. Because the sales are not just, you know, with the flashiness of the phone, but it is the aggregate of how many millions of people have a 6 and how many of those people are ready to upgrade because they want to take advantage of the new technologies and they want a faster phone. So that could swamp out any concerns about anything else. And they might say, well, you know, the iPhone 10 is expensive. It's too much for me. There might be a few people who say, well, you know, your spouse is going to get an 8 and I'll wait for a 10. We'll see how the mix goes. So I think there's enough statistics and random distribution and different interests and different timelines of people who have different phones that Apple's going to be okay. I don't think it's a problem.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the 10.
Yeah, it's going to be out there. But I don't see people standing in line to buy an 8 the way they even did for the 7, where people aren't lining up and waiting for, you know,
that's one thing.
Jet black or piano black.
We won't have big lines.
There'll be no lines. You'll be able to buy as many iPhone 8s as you want from day one. But let's talk about the real thing.
10. Roman numeral X, pronounced iPhone 10, with facial recognition called Face ID, with an infrared camera. Chances of somebody spoofing your face are 1 in 1,000,000. OLED display, HDR display, so you can display HDR content. Although I watched carefully and I saw that the camera system of the iPhone 10 can record 4K video at 60 frames per second. The iPhone 7 could only record it at 30. But it didn't say anything about recording HDR content with your camera system. So I think when they talk about the display displaying HDR, they're talking about external sources, like, you know, you're watching Netflix on your phone. But it looks pretty cool. I think I want one.
I agree. Well, first of all, you know, again, the True Tone display, which I think was also in the 8, is really important. It makes a big difference, I think. We first saw it in the 9.7-inch iPad Pro. And, you know, it's something that I think people have been waiting for, and it makes the screen, you know, a lot better.
So it starts at $999, which is pretty hefty, and it keeps the entry point in 3 digits. I haven't seen yet how much the 256 model is, whether that's merely $1099 or maybe it's a whole lot more.
I think it was a whole lot more, but I'm not looking at the notes. So, you know, there was a lot of anticipation as iPhone, you know, X, iPhone 10, iPhone Edition, iPhone Pro. By the way, for the record, I called it iPhone, you know, Roman numeral X, pronounced 10, because OS 10 was always pronounced that way, even though it was an X, but that's another story. Mm-hmm. And, you know, first of all, this thing is amazing. This is probably the most technology sophisticated phone that has ever come to market. But, you know, let's talk about price first. I thought that Apple was going to have to do a $999 price. You simply have to have an entry model at $999. The fact that they had to do it at 64 gigabytes, oh my God. I mean, your choices are 64 or 256. That's not a whole lot in the middle. And Apple is basically saying, you want the 256 one. You're going to do that 4K video. You're going to do all that fun stuff. You're not going to do it on that device. That's the one where we said we had iPhone 10 at a starting price of $999. And the only surprise I had in them, usually not surprised at these things, was they couldn't get that to 128 and still hit $999.
Yeah. Well, I've had 64 gig phones and I've had 128 gig phones, and I don't download and store a lot of video. And so the way I run my phone, 64 gig works for me, but it may not work for a lot of other people.
I just suspect the people who are the target audience for iPhone 10 aren't buying the 64 gig device.
Yeah, that's true. But you know what? If it's $1,299 for a 256, then you add sales tax, and then you add Apple Care, and you are looking at almost $1,500, maybe.
That's right. You're talking about an expensive phone, so let's be clear. iPhone 10 is an aspirational product. It's the product that I want. It's the product that I dream about. It's the product that brings me into the Apple Store and I leave with an iPhone 8. Because that's the way it's going to play out. The thing is, if we look at it as a device, the technology is amazing. The face recognition is amazing. We've seen this before in other, you know, devices from Samsung and Microsoft. I can tell you Microsoft's, you know, Windows Hello works really, really well. I don't think it has this sophistication that Apple has here. You know, we've infrared recognition and you know, ways to recognize and how to integrate this in terms of, you know, using the phone and unlocking the phone. Is, you know, it's just absolutely brilliant. The edge to edge, you know, display and that part of it, well, you know, it's just, we've seen it before. Again, Apple is kind of third to market here. Theirs is beautiful and arguably better, but it's not something they can brag about and say, we were first here, or we didn't do it first because we want to do it best. Not seeing that either. And, you know, so many of the things on iPhone 10, which again is so aspirational. I mean, I want one. I'm going to buy one. I have to have one.
So do I.
I mean, you know, let's face
it's
it.
Just, if you're going to write about it, you got to have one. You know, it's cost of being an author. Yeah.
It's the cost of living on that leading edge and saying, you know what?
It's just a shame another year is going to roll around so fast and we're going to go, oh, okay, time to hand it down.
Right. Yeah, well,
and that year is going to go fast.
And that's what we do. I'm going to find a way to justify, you know, handing my iPhone 7 off to some relative saying, here, you really need to upgrade and I got you covered. And, oh, look, I don't have a phone now, so I guess I better buy one.
We're going to have to wrap it up. So with that thought, so
I have one more thing though.
Sure.
With all the technology and everything else, doesn't change the basic phone experience. Doesn't change the way I use WhatsApp. Doesn't change the way I use email. Doesn't change the way I make phone calls. There's a lot of marketing behind iPhone 10. And once you get past the marketing and the buzzwords and the cool technology and the Johnny Ive video, you basically still have an iPhone. And I guess the question I'm going to have is, when it comes to phones, when is good enough just good enough? And normal people won't necessarily go into the stuff because they don't care about those particular high-end features,
phase of really fast evolution. When that tapers out, nobody knows.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, you're going to have to show some real, not only visible differentiation, which iPhone 10 does. I mean, it's hugely visible differentiation. But then you have to say, what for? Are most people going to care about, you know, face unlock? Are they going to care about the differentiation of the camera?
Well, when we get it in our hands, I think the joy of using it will kind of answer those questions.
No doubt. And, you know, finally, the last part was the AR stuff that Apple was talking about. I don't know about you, but I thought those AR demos were kind of lame. Like, they didn't particularly excite me in the way that, like,
it's just a stepping stone to glasses.
I definitely think glasses are the next step. Anyhow, I ran you over time. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. It was great.
And let's do this again soon, my friend.
Absolutely. Thank you for joining me, and I appreciate your comments. Your insights are always terrific as usual. So this has been the Mac Observer's Background Notes Special Edition iPhone event coverage with Michael Gartenberg. Thank you for coming by. Thank you for listening. And we'll see you on Monday, as usual, in our normal schedule of the Mac Observer's Background Mode.